Welcome to the Archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Since September 11, 2001, biological warfare has come to the forefront as a major concern worldwide. In this program, we again visit with Dr. Ken Allebeck in the second of a two-part series about his work as the director of the Biological Warfare Development Center in the former Soviet Union. Dr. Ken Allebeck is a medical doctor and holds a Ph.D. in microbiology. For 15 years, ending in 1992, he was the scientific leader of Biopreparat, the civilian branch of the Soviet Union's secret biological weapons program, a clandestine military empire masquerading as a pharmaceutical company. In 1992, Dr. Allebeck defected to the United States. Soon thereafter, he wrote Biohazard, the chilling story of the largest covert biological weapons program in the world, told from the inside by the man who ran it. This book details the development of biological weapons, the horrors of his former life, and why he chose to defect. In this, the second of a two-part series, our conversation began when I asked Dr. Ken Allebeck to talk about the morality of biological warfare. Later in this interview, we discuss an accidental release of anthrax toxin that occurred in 1979.
What happened in your life, Ken, that brought this understanding to the forefront of your thinking?
You know, it's a matter of propaganda, because for many, many years, it just I'm talking about myself. You must choose between two issues, two moral issues, whether or not you can develop biological weapons and this I call it a propaganda issue, when every single day you are told that you are developing these weapons because as a response to the United States and Great Britain and some other threats.
This is economic propaganda.
It's not just, it's a political propaganda. It's a political propaganda because we were told that the United States was an evil, it was our enemy, and there were a war between the United States and the Soviet Union would happen in any case, and we must be prepared, fully prepared for this war. And in this case, of course, it's when you're between two of these very different opposite issues, of course, you need to make your choice, and because of this everyday's propaganda, of course, probably I've chosen a wrong direction. I was involved in this program, and I was doing this work.
Well, what happened that caused you to switch the direction?
Because when Gorbachev came to power in the late 80s, I proposed to some our high-ranking officials, because I said, guys, now it's not a problem. The United States is not our enemy anymore. Let's discuss something, like, because this program is not a good program, and we have a very large offensive program. Let's discuss it, because I believe that the United States had such a program. And let's organize a secret negotiations between the United States, Great Britain, the Soviet Union, and try to resolve this program.
What was the response to that?
You know, it's you cannot even imagine how they reacted. I was so hated, and you know, just there is a good word in English with the name of just a peacemaker, and everybody knows it's a good word in English, but in Russian this word could be used in a very ironic and very negative sense. And you know, you can imagine when a colonel of the Russian army, the military person, is called a peacemaker. It's not a good name for this person. And of course, nobody wanted to discuss. It was, let me say, my first doubt, probably we need to do something. Then I talked to some intelligence, high-ranking intelligence people from KGB intelligence services and GRU military intelligence, asking to give me any evidence about the United States program, I mean biological program. And when I realized they had nothing, and I knew these services were perfect just to get any secret information, and I realized, of course, it was very suspicious to me, because I realized maybe the United States didn't have this program.
You were told that the United States had a complementary biological warfare program?
Yeah, it was. I was told practically on a daily basis that this country had this program. But when I requested to give me a precise information about this program, structural organization, the names of the facilities, biological weapons under development, and such and such, and they told me that they had absolutely nothing. And when I came to the United States to visit some so-called BW facilities named by some Russian military.
This was at Fort Detrick.
It was a Fort Detrick. It was Pine Bluff, close to Little Rock. It's the Dagui Proving Grounds, and Salk Institute in Swiftwater, at Pennsylvania. And when I saw these facilities, and I realized that these facilities were not a BW anymore. They were abandoned many, many years ago, even decades ago. And nobody was developing this weapons. It was just last droplet in my bowl. And when I came back within 2 weeks, I quit, and I left all my positions, and I decided just it was enough to me.
Well, you brought your wife and your three children.
Yeah, and in October of 1992, I came to the United States, and I brought my wife and three children to this country.
How were you able to leave the Soviet Union? In your book, you don't mention that you had passports. You just went to the international airport in Moscow and got on a plane.
You know, Barry, I would love to tell this story. In my opinion, it's an interesting story, and maybe somewhere close to my death, maybe I'll tell this story. But now, let me say this. I was helped by many, many people in Kazakhstan, in Russia, in the United States. And you know, just probably you can imagine, for example, if I start telling who and how I was helped, of course, I put these people in danger. And of course, for me, it's not a matter of my life, it's not a matter of my safety, it's a matter of safety of these people. And of course, I cannot do this. I cannot risk these people. And unfortunately, I cannot tell anything more precisely. I mean, just regarding my departure and my arrival to the United States.
Could you return to Russia if you wanted to?
No, it's impossible. If, at least now, because it's again, it's just one of more indirect signs that indicators that this country continues working in this area. Because one of my friends, he's an American government officials. He came recently from Russia, and he was told that I am among the fifth most wanted people in Russia. And if I come, of course, it's I will never be back.
Well,
he was told that I would never be forgiven by this country.
In your book, you talk about mysterious disappearances of some people who questioned what was going on, and you lead, at least me as a reader, to believe that there were assassinations.
You know, just if I knew this for sure, of course, I would say, guys, he was assassinated. But you know, just what I'm saying, just I'm trying to be absolutely precise. Just it was strange. A person disappeared because he was at that time a very undesirable person for KGB.
Will you tell us?
For example, one of them he has drowned. In this case, why? And you know, it's a question, very significant question, of course. And until Russia comes clean and just tells us what was this organization, what it was doing, what was this program, of course, we will never get a truthful information.
Well, can you do you feel that you are safe now in this country?
It's let me say this, because nobody considers can consider himself or herself safe, because you know we are living in a very let me say not very dangerous, but you know very intensive world. But from of course my situation is completely different. I'd like to believe nobody has a desire to kill me, but of course it's not more than my desire. Of course, probably if somebody wants to do this, of course it's what I know, it's absolutely impossible just to protect myself. In this case, what I can say, yeah, it's I want to live, but if I'm killed by let me say by somebody, of course I've already done what I must do.
Ken, I want to ask you about what's going on currently in Russia, but first I want to tell our listeners that my guest this week is Dr. Ken Alabek, who was born in Kazakhstan in 1950. He has a medical degree from the Military Medical School in the Soviet Union. He has a PhD in microbiology and a doctorate of science in biotechnology. For many years, he was the director of the largest covert biological weapons program in the world, in the Soviet Union. He came to the United States in 1992. Ken, what's going on now, if you know from what your friend that you just referred to was telling you, in Russia with regard to the development of biological warfare, BW as you call it?
In my opinion, Russia continues research in this area. In my opinion, Russia keeps trying just to maintain this program. Russia has several facilities, very suspicious facilities, top secret facilities. And these facilities were previously involved in developing biological weapons. And still Russia has no desire to open these facilities. And in my opinion, it's very probable, that's a very high probability that Russia continues developing biological weapons. Of course, these facilities downsized. Of course, we cannot consider them as powerful as they were before. but in many cases for developing effective biological weapons, there is no necessity to have a lot of facilities, a lot of scientists. It's possible to develop effective ones, I mean effective biological weapons, having a small group of very knowledgeable scientists.
What kind of internal controls are there that you may know of?
It's very difficult to answer this question. But in my opinion, just let's take a look at this situation from this standpoint. Now we're talking about economical structural reform in Russia, and we want to help Russia to survive. We want to prevent Russia from further decaying. But in this case, just imagine this situation. Of course, Russia still considers people who speaks out against prohibited weapons as traitors, betrayers. Russia continues developing prohibited weapons. Russia still teaches their physicians, teaches just to kill people. Russia fights its own population, like Chechnya, and kills tens of thousands of own people. Russia helps dictators like Saddam Hussein, like Slobodan Milosevic tries to help him just to continue killing own people and developing prohibited weapons. How can we believe this country in this case? And in my opinion, of course, what this country needs now, it's not, we're talking about structural and economical reform. In my opinion, this country needs a moral reform, very strong moral reform.
How would that evolve? Where would the genesis of that be?
You know, just it's very difficult to answer this question, how, but, you know, just we know not a lot about this country, but if you analyze, for example, Russian hierarchy of ruling and just all these peoples are just we call them democrats and just liberal people, but you know I see, for example, same faces in the government, of course, how
the government in Russia,
yeah, in Russia, this is absolutely the same people, and they communists and they hated the United States, the West, and they continue providing this politics. In this case, what we should expect from this country and how to do this work. Of course, it's not a matter just, of course, it could be discussed, this issue, but you know, it's very difficult just to analyze the situation when you have this very short time frame for discussion.
You had an interview with Russian television recently.
Yes, right.
What were they asking you?
You know, again, it's a very interesting question because it's so-called. I was interviewed by Russian independent TV company, and it was absolutely clear that Russian population, Russian people, know absolutely nothing about biological weapons, even in Russia. And you know, just I was trying, and all these questions were regarding what was known to Yeltsin, what was known to Gorbachev. Just probably, of course, I hope maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm naive, but I hope they wanted to show a real situation with their rulers. I mean, Russian rulers, Soviet Union rulers.
Do you think that the independent television that interviewed you would be able to show that interview in Russia?
You know, maybe I'm too naive, but I hope so. But we'll see it within a couple of weeks, what they're going to show. Because, you know, yes, I was interviewed several times by Russian TV, by some TV stations of the former Soviet Union. You know, it was okay when they talked to me, but when they aired, of course, they continued saying about betrayal, about who I was and such, instead of analyzing why, for example, this country was developing these weapons. They continue to consider the people who are involved in developing these weapons, patriots or heroes, but the people who are speaking out and tell about these weapons, they are traitors for this country. That's, in my opinion, this very disturbing indicator what's going on in Russia.
Ken, I'd like to pursue that a little bit and ask you about the role of Boris Yeltsin in covering up the accident that occurred in Sverdlovsk, where some anthrax toxin was accidentally released and many people died.
Yeah, it's 1979, and the problem, of course, not a lot of people know that at that time Yeltsin was a local party leader, let me say a local boss in that city, in that region. And of course, it's people need to know how it was organized. The local party leader was, let me say, a local god, and nothing could be done without his knowledge, without his permission. And of course, nobody could organize such a huge cover up measures without his knowledge and without his personal permission. And in this case, of course, just it's absolutely clear Yeltsin has a very high responsibility for what was done after this accident happened. Of course, he's not responsible for this specific accident.
For covering up the occurrence.
For covering up, and even more, even now, just a lot of people in that city, the relatives of the people who died, they didn't get any help, any moral and material or financial compensation from the government. And now when Yeltsin is the president of Russia, of course, in my opinion, it's his personal responsibility just to help these people, to get, let me say, any kind of absolution from what was done, including him, just to cover up the story, and because these people lost their relatives, brothers, fathers, sons, and even in this case, just imagine, nothing, absolutely nothing was done by this person.
What can we expect from Yeltsin's leadership now? The same, or has he had a moral change, a different point of view, as you have had?
Yeah, it's. But let me say this: because we're in our throughout our lives, of course, we do good things, bad things. Of course, nobody is absolutely perfect. And in this case, but when we do something bad and we have a power just to change something in our bad that was done in our life before, as Yeltsin does have this power, and he knows what was his responsibility, and he does nothing. In this case, just you can make your own conclusions whether or not we can believe this person.
What do you see as the future of Russia? We hear a lot about the economic problems, and you've told us a lot about social problems and propaganda control. What is your prediction?
From the standpoint, I know the American government is trying just to establish a good relationship between the United States and Russia. You know, it's maybe that's good. Of course, I don't want to argue with this. But you know what we must understand? It's not a matter of economical reform. It's not a matter of structural reform. It's a matter of moral reform. Because the problem is, and just not a lot of people know that, for example, last August or last summer, this country received about $5 billion help from International Monetary Fund, but you know it was mostly a part of money given by the United States, and this money has been stolen immediately instead of helping people, because a lot of people do not have salaries for many months, teachers, physicians, and a lot of federal workers. Could you imagine this situation, something like this, in the United States? Of course, it wouldn't be possible, absolutely. But in that country, people are starving. there's a huge poverty. And all these rulers, I mean government people, become richer and richer. They have several accounts in foreign banks. They have millions or even billions of dollars in their accounts. But you know, they don't interested. They are not interested in helping people. This is a significant problem. And you know, you can continue giving them money, but you know, until nothing happens. I mean, until there is a moral reform. Of course, nothing would change for the better in this country.
How do you create the moral reform?
I know it's not. It's impossible just today. In my opinion, it's there is a good expression. Each country has a ruler it deserves. In my opinion, when Russia in 1996 voted for Yeltsin again, maybe, of course, I cannot say it was a mistake, but maybe next year this country will have a new election. And, of course, it's if it elects again a corrupted person, of course, it's... these people have, one more chance to change their life. They must vote for honest people. It's, in my opinion, it's the first step just to have some changes, any changes in this country.
Well, Dr. Ken Alebeck, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you the question I ask everyone at the end of an interview, and that is, could you tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
I've read a book written by Richard Preston. It's The Cobra Event. It's a very interesting fiction book, science fiction book. Recently, a new book was published by Robin Cook. It's Vector. It's a very interesting book in science fiction regarding possible biological terrorism. In my opinion, even these books are science fiction. But they're very interesting, and they describe very probable situations.
Dr. Ken Alebeck, thank you for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
Dr. Ken Alebeck is the author of Biohazard, the chilling story of the largest covert biological weapons program in the world, told from the inside by the man who ran it. It was published in 1999. The book he recommended is Vector by Robin Cook. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.